You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you and good afternoon. August 19th, hour number two of our John C. Scott Political Forum. Well, he was an award-winning journalist for the New York Daily News and the city of New York. He's a lawyer. He is the one of the great writers for Blog for Arizona. And he joins us now. He's Larry Bodine. Larry, welcome to our show. Thank you for being with us.
Hello, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
First of all, I want people to support Blog for Arizona. What do they do? Please, send $5 right now. I don't care where you get it. Just send $5 now.
Go to blogforarizona.net, and at the top right corner, you'll see there's a little pull-down box with where you can put in the amount you want to contribute, and I would encourage you to do that right now.
Washington Post calls it the best blog in all of Arizona. All right, let's talk about this third-party money in the Democratic nominating process for mayor of Tucson. What's your take on all of this? What's the good, the bad, and the ugly of all of this?
Well, Regina Romero has really identified herself as the dirty money candidate in the mayor's race here, especially when this flyer came out last week where, you know, it depicts Steve Farley and he's taking a mask off, and then the flip side says he's trying to fool you, and then it sets out 4 points, which are complete distortions of the fact. And I was at a meeting of the Democratic Nucleus Club, and people were passing this around and showing each other, and everybody was disgusted. You know, this flyer, I think, is completely backfired on Democrats who just look at this as like a nasty late-minute Republican tactic where you introduce a smear when there's really no time to rebut it. And then when you see who it's been sent out by, it's by some phony Institute for Policy and Politics. It was created just to form to send out this flyer. And the chair is some guy called Dominic Ailman in Phoenix. There's no phone. There's no email. And this is precisely the definition of dirty money, you know, that you create a front organization that has no contacts and you dump money into a campaign. According to the Arizona Star, Regina has now got over $500,000 from PACs and outside money, not donated to her campaign, but supporting the campaign.
You know, it strikes me as just absolutely bizarre that she was the clean elections candidate in the very beginning through this whole process. There's nothing clean about this last-minute effort at all. Nothing clean about it.
No, you're absolutely right, and people don't look at her as the clean elections candidate. You know, they look at someone who, you know, she herself has raised something like close to $300,000 with direct donations and then the match by the city as a clean elections candidate, but that amount is completely dwarfed by the amount that's been spent by over five outside groups. The Star had a tally of $510,000. Has been spent by PACs to support Romero, which is more than her own campaign.
Wow.
And just to give you an idea of, you know, how the dirty money works, one of the donors is a PAC called Chispa Arizona. And it's an organization that's run by Romero's former chief of staff, Laura Dent, and it's spent $235,000 in the race. So, you know, to claim you're the clean elections campaign when one of your henchmen is out contributing money and gathering funds in a PAC is really unbelievable. Nobody sees her as the clean elections candidate that I talk to.
I can't imagine this helping her once people take a look at this. There are those that don't follow it that closely and may take a look at the brochure and go, oh, my gosh, Farley fooled us. Nothing could be further from the truth. And the distortion of his voting record on some key issues such as health and education, which are two issues that he fought valiantly for the people of Arizona and happened to be on the winning side of it, even though they were Republican issues that needed Republican support in order to pass. I just think it's going to be a disaster if you nominate Regina Romero as mayor. But with this particular kind of campaign she's run, I think a campaign will tell you a great deal about a candidate. And she has never rejected any of these distortions, which she could easily do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, as you mentioned, Farley is known as the pro-education, pro-teacher legislator. He helped the Red for Ed movement, you know, get to the right places, you know, do the right things. I mean, he basically helped them as much as possible. So two quick points about this flyer. You know, it attacks Farley's record of voting with his fellow Democrats against a Republican bill that was designed to hurt public schools. And it also attacks him for voting against a bill to eliminate teacher certification requirements. You know, that completely misstates his record. You know, this is a guy who has called for, you know, teacher pay raises to go up, and, you know, and for funding to be restored to public schools. We're nowhere near the level we were at in funding 10 years ago. And Farley, you know, has spent his 12-year career in the legislature fighting for that. And, you know, I got to tell you, you know, Democrats are dismayed when they see all of this negative campaigning and, you know, the slick flyers that are mailed out from Phoenix, right? This is a Tucson election. Why are Phoenix groups involved? You know, Democrats are skeptical.
Well, as Kipling wrote, if you can bear to hear the truth, you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools. I guess you could call that the effort of the Reyna Romero campaign. You know, I've been involved in politics for a long, long time, won some races, lost some, and, you know, got beat by just a few votes and along the way. You know, I find politics not only the most exhilarating thing that you can be involved in, but some of the most painful things that you can be involved in as well. But when you fight so hard for so many things that you feel very good about, which would be health care and education, as Farley has done, and then see this on a brochure calling you a liar and an individual who actually voted just the opposite as the way you'd voted, it's got to really make you mad.
I agree, and I think you know, these PAC-funded efforts that support Reyna Romero are going to backfire. At least by, you know, voters who were in the know and, you know, who have some familiarity with the candidate, you're going to take one look at this and go like, oh, this is a Republican-style last-minute hit piece. And it's not going to work, you know. And here's the other irony. Reyna Romero has endorsed the Outlaw Dirty Money campaign, which would require that these outside PACs, you know, have to disclose who originally earned the money. And yet, she's benefiting from all of these PACs, and I got to say, you know, Democrats want a clean election. You know, they want to hear the candidates talk about what they're going to do, and, you know, to hear about their experience, and they don't want to see these kind of cheap shots. It just cheapens, you know, Romero, who benefited from this cheap shot.
There may be some people who might say, well, look, I really am turned off by this dirty campaigning on the part of the third-party effort for Reyna Romero, but I can't support Farley. You can go to Randy Dorman, so there is a relief for you there along the way. You don't have to vote for Farley, and Randy may benefit from this somewhat, so that's something to consider as well, with three in the race.
Well, that's a good point. You know, I interviewed Randy Dorman for the Block for Arizona and found her very impressive. You know, she's got a really clear-eyed vision for, you know, a 21st century Tucson. And you can see my article online on the Block for Arizona. And but in my experience with Tucson voters is they don't elect real estate developers. They don't elect business people. If there's a business person on the ballot, you know, they're going to come in a distant third. And, you know, my observation is I think it's head and neck and neck with Romero and Farley. And I think Romero will come in a distant third. And, you know, in a way, it's too bad because I think she has a lot to offer. But, you know, Dorman has been active in the city, and I would hope to see her continue to do that.
Yeah, we'll have her on the air tomorrow at 3 o'clock, and she is a qualified candidate. There's no question about that. Downside of this is she's such a newcomer. I mean, Reyna Romero has been on the city council for 12 years. That's a long time. And, of course, Steve Farley has been in the House 6 years, the Senate 6 years. He's asked for your vote many, many times over that dozen years. And so you're pretty familiar with him, certainly if you live in Winter Haven and you're in that particular legislative District 9, which he represented. You're pretty much familiar with Steve Farley. But he was more than just active about his legislative boundaries. He was active throughout the entire community in many different respects. And we had him on the show when the Farley Report, which he authored almost on a very regular basis for the entire time he was in the legislature, which I thought was a Herculean task, because after, you know, working all day and putting in 12 hours and you go and sit down and write for four or five more every single week to tell people what you were doing, that shows a great deal of discipline and I think a commitment to the job. I'll tell you, I've followed so many legislators, served with some as well. Most of them are just lazy as hell, to be honest with you. I mean, they just don't give a rat's behind about the hard work that is really necessary to do a good job with that legislature, such as reading all the bills, such as going into some kind of conversations with people about the good and the bad of these hundreds of pieces of legislation that you see in just a couple of years as a legislator. But I'll tell you, we've elected some of the laziest people I've ever met in my life. I've been shocked by that. Not all, but many. Farley's not one of them.
You make a good point, John, that, you know, political experience is important. And, both Romero and Farley have long political histories. And the reason that it's important is you know what they're going to do when they're in office. You know, it makes them a known quantity. You know, you can define them according to what they say and not what they do. And I don't know, I see that as a shortcoming for Romero. As much as I admire her, she's really, she's been active in very many community organizations, but she hasn't been elected before. And in my opinion, that puts her at a disadvantage against, Farley was in the legislature for 12 years, Romero was on the city council for 12 years. You can look at the record and see where they stand. And, you know, the other thing people want to see is, the elected official, you know, send out a report. What have you been up to? Hold town halls. Give a chance to get feedback from the community. And Farley has done that. You know, you mentioned the Farley Report. I can think of a couple of other legislators that do that. For instance, Pamela Powers Handley regularly sends video reports on days when the legislature is in session. That's what people want. You know, they want you to stand up and say, well, this is what I've done and this is what I stand for, and look at my votes. You can see where I'm coming from.
Laurie, before I let you go, do you think the sanctuary movement situation is, obviously it's going to be on the ballot. At least that's what the judge has ruled. Will voters vote yes on this, do you think?
Boy, you know, that's a good question. I don't really have a feel for that, but I do factor in the fact that none of the mayoral candidates have endorsed it. I know that the people behind the Sanctuary City Initiative, are good, honest people who say what they mean. It's an effort that's primarily led by Joel Feinman, the public defender in Tucson, a really admirable guy, a straight shooter. And I was really glad to see that the judge threw out the challenge to the Sanctuary City activity, because it was basically a GOP, the County Republican Party was funding this lawsuit. They put up, three straw people to be the plaintiffs, and they sued the city, the county, every single member of the city council. And I just read the opinion. It's 12 pages, and it's not that bad. And it's really clear that the GOP was just misrepresenting and misinterpreting city law, state law, the Constitution, about how many signatures you needed, whether the circulators had to put in their city, state, and zip on affidavits, whether they could correct, putting in their printed name in a line where it called for a signature. I mean, all sorts of bogus, hyper-technical arguments. And I was really glad to see the judge throw it out, because basically the people of Tucson have a right to vote on this issue. And all the mayoral candidates have made it clear, while they don't support it, if it becomes part of the city code, well, they're all going to defend it. But, you know, the key point is voters in Tucson should have a right to vote on this.
Larry Bodine, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for all the work that you do. If people want to know what progressives are thinking tonight or tomorrow morning or anytime, 24 hours a day, you just go to Blog for Arizona and you'll find out. Larry, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
He's a lawyer. He's an award-winning journalist from New York. He is Larry Bodine of Blog for Arizona. Send him some money. Really, $5, $10, whatever. It's well worth your time if you are a progressive to keep this progressive voice loud and clear in Southern Arizona through the next very critical 18 months of campaigning. I'll be back in a moment. I'll talk with Allison Jones, the chairperson of the Pima County Democratic Party, after these messages. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. Allison Jones is the chairperson of the Democratic Party in Pima County. She joins me now. Allison, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could be here. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Well, we're in uncharted waters here with outside money in the Raheena Romero campaign for mayor. And it is somewhat of a distortion of really what this so-called clean elections, issue is all about. What's your take on what's happening in our town for the very first time? And it is historic.
It is. Well, first of all, this money that I believe you're talking about are legally, they're known as independent expenditures. And that means that this is money being spent by third parties completely unrelated to the candidates. In fact, they're not even allowed to coordinate with them in any way. So Ms. Romero is running a clean election campaign. Her campaign is abiding by those rules. But the bottom line is campaign finance is messed up, period, because of dirty money that's coming into politics and trying to sway voters. And it's going to be the case unless we can take action to disclose who is spending this money and what their agenda is.
Even though they cannot coordinate between the campaign of Raheena Romero and the third-party effort that has pumped in perhaps as much as $750,000 into the campaign, the candidate could, if in fact see a distortion in the publicity of that third-party effort, could ask people to reject it, knowing that it's not true. I'm surprised because the last mailer I got was a very serious hit piece against Steve Farley, all lies about his position on education, funding for health care in the state of Arizona, and literally about his entire legislative career. I've interviewed him probably every week for the last 12, 15 years that I've known him, and I know him to be an individual who supported the Medicaid expansion, who supported higher salaries for teachers and fought very hard for them. So the last publication, or at least pamphlet sent out by these third-party efforts, was a total, complete lie about Steve Farley. I think it was incumbent on Raheena Romero to reject that, but you're right. She doesn't have to. These are third-party efforts. They're not supposed to be coordinated in any other way, but they can have an effect, and they could alter, I think, the campaign, could they not, Allison?
Well, absolutely. And the independent expenditures in this mayoral race, I have not seen the data, but it has to be a record amount of money being spent. And, you know, that really is the bigger question. How are we going to protect the integrity of our elections from this anonymous dirty money? And I would urge every Arizonan to sign the Outlaw Dirty Money petition, and let's get some transparency in who's behind this. Because once these folks can no longer hide behind these political action committees, their money is no longer effective because you know what their agenda is and why they're doing what they're doing. That is the bigger challenge for all of us. And Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians are all behind this.
I agree. Terry Goddard, the former Attorney General, has put together numerous efforts to try to clean up dirty money in the state of Arizona. He's not been successful so far, but you're right. I think it's the responsibility of every individual who believes in this democracy to shine the light on this dark money that distorts the entire political process of America, whether it's for a mayor's office or dog catcher or whatever. I mean, it can. I mean, we're all the way down to mayor now. And his influence. And we've never seen this before, ever.
These groups are literally buying influence. They are buying their politicians.
They are.
They are buying the people who can do what they want them to do. It's absolutely un-American. We all need to get behind Outlaw Dirty Money. And you can sign the petition, outlawdirtymoney.com. Go to their website or call Pima County Democratic Party headquarters, and we'll get you lined up with it. But this is maybe if there's a silver lining in this mayoral election, it is that it is calling attention to this insidious phenomenon.
And that's exactly what it is. The one thing I think that I've had great hopes for is when this campaign started between Randy Dorman and, of course, Raheena Romero and Steve Farley, I thought the issues were pretty clear, both articulating, or all three of them articulating, where they stood on all these particular issues, whether it be about regional transportation dollars for transportation needs, or whether it be about more police officers, more parks, what all the issues that were discussed about the needs of City Hall. Each one of these individuals had, I think, a very clear opportunity to state how they would handle the challenges of a city as mayor of that city. Then it just turned in a minute when you started pumping hundreds of thousands of dollars from a third party into the race. It altered everything. It just distorted everything. It changed this race.
It does. It does. And it makes, and I wish I knew who was behind these things, because it makes you wonder what their motive is. There is a motive behind this money.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
Somebody wants something.
I agree.
And we just don't know who it is and what they want.
Well, you know, some of the third-party money was coming from unions, others from other PACs across the country, but none of it was from Tucson. It was either from Phoenix or someplace else, out-of-state money, to distort and alter a mayor's race in our town, which I think should all be left for us to decide, not for them to decide.
I mean, you know when the firefighters are putting money into a campaign, you know what they want.
Of course.
They want a better contract.
But these are our firefighters that did that, that supported Farley.
But some of these other mailers and the particularly nasty ones, we really don't know, and we may never know. And the law protects them right now.
Right.
We've got to change that.
Well, has the Democratic Party taken any particular position on these third-party efforts, or will you have some consideration or some kind of statement from the party saying, we reject this kind of politics and we urge you to fight it?
We have not. We have passed a resolution in support of the Outlaw Dirty Money initiative.
Right.
And we don't pick a side during a primary. And we really try not to tell the candidates about what kind of strategy they need to employ in their campaign. They are the ones with investing everything they have in it, and they are doing what they think is best. And personally, yes, I would like to see people disavowing this kind of nastiness.
Allison Jones is chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. It appears that the sanctuary ordinance or law will be on the ballot in November if the judge has ruled that it can stay on the ballot from the petition effort. Has the party taken a stand on the sanctuary movement issue?
Yes. Our executive committee passed a resolution in support of that initiative several months ago, and we did have to pass that by a supermajority. I believe it was 75%, and we did.
That's surprising because all three of the Democratic nominees for mayor oppose it, and as do many of the council members. In fact, I don't know of a council candidate. There may be one or two, but I don't know of any that support it. Did that surprise you, that kind of margin and that kind of ease by which the Democratic Executive Committee said, support the sanctuary movement?
It did.
Status.
I wasn't sure that we could get 75% to pass it, but we did. And, you know, yes, there are some questions regarding the initiative, but in light of all the developments in immigration in the past month or so, we are more committed than ever to that initiative.
Well,
things are not getting better. They're getting worse.
You know, my feeling is that I think those visuals that you just referred to may have a huge impact on that particular vote. You see children stripped from the arms of their mothers and fathers at the border. You see horrific pictures of these particular migrants all crowded into very small spaces for long periods of time. And you see the continued Trump attitude toward these people as he calls them animals and despicable names, and then pits them against us with references to them as being less than human. I think that touches the minds and the hearts and the souls of all Tucsonans, and I think the sanctuary movement may not correct all these problems at the border, but it's a statement. It is a statement that I think many Democrats, I think it'll pass. A lot of people say, you're crazy. I don't think it's going to pass. But I believe that it will if it stays on the ballot, and apparently it will stay on the ballot. I think a great many Democrats say, this is my statement. I don't have any other statement to make, but this is the one I have, and this is the one I'm going with. So that's my feeling. What do you think?
Well, you know, Democrats, at least on our executive committee, have been saying all along, what better way to get people to come out to vote than give them something they really believe in? And I think we're going to see a whole new voting population. I heard that when many people were approached about signing this petition, they couldn't sign it fast enough when they understood what sanctuary really means. And I really don't know if it's going to pass. It depends on what day you ask me.
Okay.
It's going to, I think it's going
asking
to
you on Monday. If you ask me on Monday, I think it will. And I don't know, undecided. I just think that, there's deep feelings, especially among progressives, among Democrats, concerning what has happened at the border. We saw the outpouring of support for the migrants who were passing through here at the Benedictine Sanctuary. We also saw the kind of support that the city was receiving, along with the county, especially the county, for a new detention center that will be turned over for people to be there as they are in transit to someplace else. I think this is a town that is moved by this incredible tragedy that we watch unfold by the border every single day. The razor wire that separates us from Nogales, which we've never seen before in our lives, and many of us who's lived here for decade after decade, crossing the border without any problem for many, 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 many years, and now realizing that it's a fortress and a war going on. And then, of course, the tragedy, the incredible tragedy of what happened in El Paso, the slaughter of human beings, all based upon race, I think has mm-hmm. made people absolutely so sensitive to these issues that they will look for whatever means possible to have their voice heard. And voting for the sanctuary movement proposition is one of those statements they will make. But we'll see.
We'll see. We'll see.
Well, by the way, when did the Democratic committee make that decision? Was that a month ago, 2 months ago? It wasn't recent, was it?
I think it was in March.
Oh, maybe, was it
or
that?
April.
Really? Okay.
March or April, yes.
I'll be darned. Okay. Well, it was. time flies when you're having fun here. What about this turnout for the Democrats? I think it'll be a big turnout, don't you, from a write-in effort for the mayoral and city council races?
I think it will be. I think Republicans are going to come out in force too.
Really?
Yes, I do. Regardless of whether they have a candidate on the ballot or not, I think they have a preferred candidate, and they're going to do what they can to make their voices heard, which is why Democrats cannot be complacent about this election.
Indeed, they cannot be. Allison,
we cannot be.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. Thanks for your hard work. It's good to talk with you. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Allison Jones is the chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. Republican Leah Marquez Peterson is a member of the Arizona Corporation Commission. She is my guest next on the John C. Scott Political Forum on this August 19th. Stay with us. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. With us now, Leah Marquez Peterson, Republican member of the Arizona Corporation Commission. Leah, welcome. How you doing?
Oh, good. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. We know that Arizona Public Service was involved in some very shady dealings with the supporting corporation commissioners and their political involvement, and that this Arizona Corporation Commission has been trying to clean up this act I guess, almost every day since we had it revealed to us from not only the Arizona Republic, but other publications around the state. How dirty was it? How much cleanup is this being done, and how are you involved in the cleanup?
Well, I think what I'd explain is to folks that independent expenditure groups get engaged in these races, I mean, in many throughout the state and certainly at the federal level. APS and other organizations were active in the last, I think it was the 2016 election, in a big way, and that's what really hit the paper and created negative media attention and talked about whether they were buying votes. And I mean, so there's lots of controversy surrounding it. At this point, fast forward to 2019, what we've done on the Arizona Corporation Commission is to analyze, discuss, and ultimately vote in a new code of ethics. So we are clear that as people who are candidates for the ACC or sitting on the current Arizona Corporation Commission, we are not taking dollars from utilities or utilities employees. And we're very clear the code of ethics is very robust. It talks not only about campaign contributions, but also in dealings we have throughout the year or accepting meals or gifts from anybody. So it's very, very careful. And I think it's a reaction to Arizonans and constituents' concern about undue influence on the commissioners. So I've been at this now about 10, 11 weeks, and I've been extremely careful in events I attend, and certainly I've launched my own campaign for this seat, so I, of course, will not take any dollars from utilities or utility employees. But I think there's a very hyper-sensitive and very aware and visible nature to who's engaging in elections, and not only at this level, but certainly throughout the state and at the federal level, too.
Well, I think this is a long time coming. I think there's always been some questions as to the relationship between these massive utility companies and the great power of the Arizona Corporation Commission. This is a move you almost had to make to clean this up. And it was a dark cloud over the commission, wasn't it? I mean, you admit that.
It was. And if you watch the 2018 election unfold, I mean, the Arizona Corporation Commission has always been very competitive. I've watched past debates and a lot of the different conversations that occurred, and there was a lot of concern with the utilities weighing in or, you know, stakeholders weighing in on these races, especially when we as commissioners regulate the utility industry. So that was certainly top of mind. And luckily in 2019, we have focused on that, passing this code of ethics, and that will certainly impact the upcoming election in 2020.
Well, let's talk about some of the issues that the Corporation Commission is going to deal with now at the end of the summer, end of the fall, that you think are important for all of us. What are some of the major decisions that you're going to have to make here?
There are some very big issues that we're tackling, and I want to point out to your listeners that if they can't get to Phoenix to attend a meeting and weigh in, which I understand, you can always watch our proceedings and even call in at azcc.gov, the website. But one of the I think, most broad issues that I was very surprised about is we really have no energy plan in Arizona. What I've seen historically and others have seen is individual commissioners writing plans. But I think it's important that we need to have our own Arizona plan that really puts Arizona first. Or we're going to have initiatives like we had, you know, the outsider, the California billionaire Tom Steyer run this last election cycle, or the federal government stepping in and weighing in. It's important we have an Arizona energy plan. So that's top of mind for me, and that encompasses so much of the work we're doing. What you see a lot right now, especially in the Arizona Republic, is conversation and concern surrounding disconnection rules for our utilities also. That's another very big issue. If you've been following the case of Ms. Pullman, she unfortunately passed away last year after having her electricity disconnected in the Phoenix area. So we immediately acted on this several months ago to form disconnection rules where people can't have their electricity disconnected for those that we regulate through the entire summer up through mid-October. I think it was important. We needed to ensure that there were resources for folks that were low income or had medical conditions, that they absolutely not have their electricity disconnected during these very, very hot times. And in Phoenix, oh my gosh, it gets to 112, 115, unbelievable. But we also now that it's, you know, the summer is ebbing and we're already into mid-August, we've also got to be concerned with what's going to happen after October 15th. You know, we don't want folks to be accruing these huge bills that then have to be paid out over time. So I know I met with nonprofit organizations and Pima County just recently, last week, to talk about, you know, how are we communicating and promoting resources to folks throughout Pima County and then certainly throughout the state. So that's another issue that's really top of mind for, I think, all of the commissioners as well as all the different stakeholders we work with.
Well, by the way, obviously, I think most people believe there ought to be a penalty if you don't pay your utility bill, but it shouldn't be the death penalty. I mean, for God's sake.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, absolutely.
And, you know, and it seems to me, too, I'm not sure. There may be people taking advantage of this particular period of time, but you may have numbers from the utilities, do you not, of how many people are not paying their bills because of this particular regulatory decision that the ACC has made. Is there a number of saying, well, thousands of people are just not paying their bill anymore because they don't have to because they know they won't have their utility turned off?
This has been very complex. I mean, so this started months ago with, I called for a third-party investigation into how APS handled this, how
yes.
our own ACC staff handled this. Unfortunately, I didn't get full support. I need 3 votes to get anything passed, and I didn't get my commission, fellow commissioner support in this. So what we're doing at this point is we wrote a letter from my commissioner office individually to each of the utilities, whether they're regulated by the Corporation Commission or not. I kind of overstepped that bound and asked every utility to turn in to us what their disconnection rules look like now, how they work specifically with their customers, and not to in any way, you know, try to overregulate them, but to understand what are the best practices, what works out there. I've heard from a number of co-ops that handle more rural Arizona that it's very different when you're serving your neighbors and people you're going to church with and you see in the grocery store in a small town environment versus a very large or massive electric company where you don't know the people you're interacting with. Disconnection is handled differently throughout the state, whether it's water utility or electric. So I'm gathering a lot of that data through my office. I'm also trying to understand what have the calls been like? Are we flooded with phone calls now, the utilities, because of these disconnection rules, or is nobody calling? In fact, I talked to TEP just recently and did a tour of one of their facilities. Have they seen a reduction in phone calls? Which is not necessarily a good thing, though, right? That might mean that people are thinking, oh, free-for-all, I'm not going to pay if it's not, maybe it's not a income issue or even a life-threatening issue, but they're thinking this is a pass. And it's important that we communicate to them that this is going to catch up. We do need to see bills paid after October 15th. So I applaud Pima County Action Center for really stepping out there with all of the different utilities, Tucson Water, Trico, TEP, and others, to talk about, you know, the folks that need to make payment plan and to get caught up on their electricity bill as soon as the summer's over.
Tell me about
that's something we're going to have to tackle.
Leah Marquez-Peterson is my guest. She's a Republican member of the Corporation Commission. Tell me about the battle over solar energy. And you know what a nightmare that was with the commission so much involved in the regulatory powers they have over solar. Have you ever worked out a policy where everybody knows where they are on this particular issue and at least where we're going with this or not?
Yeah, so the Arizona Corporation Commission years ago set a 15% renewable standard for the state. And
right.
We have accomplished that, and in the case of TEP, actually exceeded it, and different corners of the state have exceeded that. Now we're having these very important workshops that I encourage people to call in or watch online at azcc.gov. Well, we're talking about what should our goals or mandates be in the state of Arizona. This is referencing back to what's the energy plan in Arizona. Do we have clean energy goals that includes nuclear? Do we have renewable that's solar and wind? What about the use and the rollout of new technologies and innovation that even in my short time at the ACC, I've heard so much about new technology and innovation that could change the way that Arizona generates and distributes power in the future. There's a lot of exciting things happening in the industry, and as a state, I think we're trying to wrap our arms around that now and have these very important workshops. Solar is absolutely key to this. We also had a very engaged debate, I would call it, dialogue on electric vehicles, and we passed an electric vehicle implementation policy. When you talk about carbon reduction, the number one way that can be done is by getting our gasoline vehicles, right, minimized and electric vehicles increased. But that's going to take a while. We don't have as many charging stations throughout the state. They're not as affordable yet. But with innovation, I think, and change, that can also become more prevalent in the future. But there's a lot of exciting things out there. We just need to decide as a state what direction we want to go and be cautious and judicious about it so we don't end up like perhaps Texas, who's had issues this past week, or even California, who had issues in the past. So we're exploring other states, what they've done, and kind of what best practices are.
Has the commission finalized all the transmission lines south to Mexico and to California? Is that done, or are there more to come?
No, and it's interesting, John. I asked that, too, because you know my interest in working with cross-border relations and so on. There certainly has been work in cross-border transmission. I think they're still negotiating. And as you know, APS is through the Douglas port of entry area, and TEP Unisource is through Nogales area. So I think that's still in the works at this point. Mexico, as you know, deregulated years ago, and I was curious to find out what's the impact there and how that has an impact on Arizona. But I don't see as coordinated an effort yet. I think talks are still just beginning.
So the Douglas port is where that's more affected, right? Than Nogales, right?
It depends. If energy.
Forgive me, I have no idea what I'm talking about. it's a little confusing, as you know.
Yeah, at this point, I don't believe we have energy transmitting across our U.S.-Mexico border in that regard, like you would think, supplying different cities or communities in Agua Prieta or Nogales, Sonora, or others. But that it's a matter of building those transmission lines, so whether they're backup for the state of Arizona or the state of Sonora or play a different role, I think that's what's still being negotiated right now. I've not heard anything definitive around that yet, nor from Texas and Chihuahua and other states, you know, along the border.
Of course, when you talk about the Arizona Corporation Commission, you think about corporations. Tell people, if you will, the powers that you have over the corporations of the state, big and small. I'm a corporation, so I'm registered with you. Corporations are. The responsibilities you have to me and to other corporations, big or small, throughout Arizona.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up, John, because though we're called the Corporation Commission, many people don't realize we are licensing all of the businesses in the state of Arizona. So that was top of mind to me when I was appointed to this position by Governor Ducey. We had a backlog for a while. That was very concerning. Now that is cleaned up. We have new leadership in place over our corporation division. We're going to be streamlining things, making it easier to be able to expedite your incorporation documents in the future. We have a lot of people moving here to open businesses and want to make sure that's easier. Also, if you've opened a business in this state, as I have in the past, you know that you go to one department for incorporation, another for your trademark, another for your tax documents. So we're doing what we can to try to streamline that also. But perhaps one web portal where all of those different links are happening that are then promoted through either the Arizona Commerce Authority or our Chambers of Commerce. We still have work to do to streamline it, to make it even easier to do business and to get set up in Arizona. And unfortunately, it's not that clear now. As a former chamber president, I know I did a lot of referrals to folks and kind of coaching to different people as they were starting their own small businesses. So we really need to make that simpler in the state of Arizona.
By the way,
we oversee the incorporation piece of that.
Is there an Arizona Corporation Commission office I can knock on the door in Tucson?
There is, yes. We've got one down at the state building at 400 West Congress.
Do you have an office
down
there?
I do. I'm the only commissioner not from or living in Phoenix. I live down here in Tucson. Having lived down here for more than 40 years, I asked permission to open a commission office right in that state building on Congress. So been open about a month. I've been meeting with folks from Sabarita to Morenci to different communities so they don't have to drive all the way to Phoenix. So that's a place you can find me right there on the second floor. And there are a couple days of the week here in Tucson, then another couple days of the week up in Phoenix every week.
So you split Phoenix and Tucson weekly. I mean, half and
yes.
half.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, that keeps you on I-10, right, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm spending a lot of time on I-10, and people assumed I'd move to Phoenix, but no, I'm a Tucsonan through and through, so I'm living here and kind of making my trek north every week.
Well, when you get to Red Rocks, you're almost home, right? I mean, that's the way you look at it.
That's right.
Okay, I only have 40 minutes to go. Boy, I tell you, that having served in the Senate and commuted every single day up and back, you can get to that particular point where you go, oh, my, I got to get on this highway one more time, but...
I know, and luckily that freeway is now expanded to three lanes in near Casa Grande, and they're doing more in Eloy, and so we're getting there. It makes it a little easier.
Yeah, it does, but it's still a dangerous road. It really, 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 really is. You like this job, don't you?
You know, I do. I've having run the Hispanic Chamber for so many years, I dealt with thousands of business owners in many different industries. So how I relate that to the Corporation Commission is I've had to do a deep dive into electricity, water, gas, wastewater. You know, we have a securities division, our incorporation division. So I'm like cramming for finals every day, I tell people, just learning as much as I can about the industries and what I can do to help. I've also made sure that I'm out and about. I've been in Casa Grande and Maricopa, up in the Phoenix area too, meeting with folks so that I can hear directly from them in terms of their opinion. I've been speaking at some different, Lions groups and things of that nature, so they know more about what the Corporation Commission does. You'd be surprised how many people really haven't heard of it or realize its role. And I offer that to your listeners if they've got a group they'd like to have me come out and talk more about the Arizona Corporation Commission. They can find me on the Arizona Corporation Commission website.
Well, I thank you for the conversation and good luck with this job. You run again in 2020 for a 4-year term, 6-year term. How many years?
Yeah, it's a 4-year term, and I'll be in the November 2020 election.
All right. Well, it's not like this is foreign to you, this campaigning. Right? You've been doing that for a while here.
Back into it. Yeah,
absolutely.
I enjoy it, getting out and about and talking to folks. So hope people will remember that as we get closer to the election.
Leah, thank you very much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Have a great evening.
You too. Thanks. Leah Marquez Peterson, Republican, a member of the Arizona Corporation Commission. Well, thank God, Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party, he is appalled at the third party money coming into the mayoral race in Tucson, Arizona, the Democratic primary, as Rahina Romero, the Ward 1 councilperson, has pumped in about $750,000 from outside sources, and you can call that dark money, and that she is now the queen of dark money in southern Arizona. I want to thank Benny White for being with us as well. He was one of the Republicans who challenged the status of the sanctuary issue as to whether Tucson would become a sanctuary city. That's going to remain on the ballot, and voters will have a vote on that come November. I want to thank Larry Bodine, the Blog for Arizona editor. He's an individual who was an award-winning journalist with the New York Daily News. He is a lawyer and now devotes all of his time to Blog for Arizona, the progressive blog of southern Arizona. You want to know what progressives are thinking? Well, you just go to Blog for Arizona to find out. I want to thank Steve Farley for being here. He's been the victim of a third-party effort unlike any we've ever seen in a race for mayor of Tucson. Unlike anything we've ever seen. Perhaps as much as $1 million raised by out-of-city interest to support Rahina Romero for mayor. Why? What do they get for that? Not much. Allison Jones is with us. She's very upset about the out-of-city money that is trying to nominate Rahina Romero for mayor of Tucson as well. Allison Jones is the chair of the Pima County Democrats. And then again, this conversation with Leah Marquez Peterson rounded out our show. Our show is brought to you by Perfection Auto Works, complete auto repair, foreign and domestic. Mike Emery is an honest mechanic. He's a genius when it comes to fixing cars. He can fix your car with an honest approach and a fair price. And I think a respect for you that you don't find anywhere else when it comes to auto repair. Perfection Auto Works, 1046 North Beverly. Call Mike Emery at 323-8650. Have a great evening, everybody. Next, the best local talk show in all of America. Steve Rivera's Eye on the Ball. I'm John C. Scott. Thanks for listening to our show. Back tomorrow, 3 to 5 over this backyard fence, talking the politics of Southern Arizona. Have a great evening, everyone. Thanks for listening.